Elsie knew he ought to walk down to the church and see Audrey, but he didn't want to. She'd just nag at him, and he was tired of it. Maybe he deserved the nagging, but he just didn't want to hear it anymore. He farted as he got to his feet, and he smiled a little. He was a large man. He liked to eat. He also liked to drink, and just now he was feeling like a beer. Maybe he'd walk down to Pete's tap for a cold one. Wouldn't that be good? Right about now? Yes. He put on his coat, an old brown Big Smith work coat that smelled of tobacco and sweat. Mossy had a hard time with the zipper. He was getting a bit of the arthritis as the years were going by. It scared him. He didn't want to get old. Mossy slid the sliding glass door open and walked outside into the cold December air. The backyard was brown. All the grass was dead now, or dormant, and spring seemed a good ways off. Mossy took a pack of Territons from his coat pocket, and he put a cigarette in his mouth. He knew he ought to quit them, but he'd never been able to. He liked them too much. They did something for him, made him feel a little more at ease. They went good with beer, too. He couldn't imagine a beer without a cigarette, and he certainly couldn't imagine life without a beer. Mossy walked down the alley, and he saw a squirrel up there walking along a telephone line high overhead. He liked squirrels. He left hard corn out for them in the winter, nailed to a tree. He could be kind like that, but he could be mean, too. Mostly he was mean to Henrietta. Mossy thought Henry was mean, too. They fought a lot. Lately they'd been fighting more than ever. Mossy didn't want to think about that right now. He just wanted his beer, and he wanted to sit with his drinking buddies and have a few laughs. Was that a crime? Henrietta seemed to think it was. She didn't seem to like anything Mossy did.
"Hey, Mossy!"
Goot Huebner was always the first to say hello to Mossy when he walked into Pete's tap. Pete himself would just nod behind the bar and get Mossy's can of hams ready for him. He knew that Mossy liked to pull the tab on the can by himself. It was part of the pleasure of the drinking experience, hearing that sound and then smelling the smell of the hops as they wafted up to his old red nose when the tab was pulled. And he liked the nice sound of the beer being poured into the glass, the foam, that first taste, that was the best. And then soon after, a cigarette would be lit, and the day would be underway. Mossy might stay 6-7 hours before he'd head back home to Henrietta. By then he'd be pretty lit up and randy sometimes. At least he used to be randy. Henrietta hated that when Mossy would come home all ready to mess around, follow her around the house, trying to hug her and pinch her and kiss her. She hated that smell on his breath, the clothes, the beer, the smoke. Why didn't he want her when he was sober? Why were men so awful sometimes? While Mossy sat at the bar with Goot Huebner and his other drinking buddies, Henrietta was at the First Methodist Church on Washington Street, practicing the organ. She'd been the church organist there since 1964, and it was something that she really enjoyed. Henrietta loved playing all of the popular hymns, "Crown Him with Many Crowns," "As Morning Dawns," "The King of Love, My Shepherd Is." Her favorite was probably "O God, Our Help in Ages Past," but there were so many that she truly loved. She played for Sunday church services, and she played for weddings and funerals too. She was content in knowing that her organ playing added solemnity to church services, joy to joyful occasions, and comfort in sad situations. She was proud and grateful to be the church organist. She received lots of compliments too, which she enjoyed. In addition to her love of being the church organist, Henrietta also liked to be in the church by herself when it was quiet. It gave her a peaceful feeling, a safe feeling. She felt close to God at these times, and often she would pray to him. Many times her prayers were for her husband, Mossy, and for their marriage, which Henrietta spent a good deal of time worrying about. She'd even talked to Pastor Paul about it a time or two, but this embarrassed her, and she didn't like doing it. It made her feel as though Pastor Paul thought less of her somehow, and she so wanted his approval. She so wanted Pastor Paul to respect her and to like her. She admired him so. He, with his strong voice and his religious fervor and conviction. He, with his full black hair and his flowing black robes. Guiltily, she wondered sometimes if she wasn't a little too fond of him. She knew many of the other ladies in town shared the same feelings. Henrietta put these thoughts aside, and she adjusted her sheet music on the organ. Then she began to play, and the rich sound of that pipe organ filled the empty church. Tears filled Henrietta's eyes, as they often did, when she heard the wonderful sound of it. Pastor Paul was not at home working on his sermon for Sunday, as one might have imagined he would be on a Saturday afternoon. He wasn't at the church as Henrietta practiced. He wasn't rolling up his sleeves and maybe working on the plumbing that needed repair in the church, or painting the fellowship room where the Bismol pink was beginning to fade and peel. Pastor Paul was in Des Moines at the Traveler's Lodge on Grand Street in room 221 with Jackie Dermody, the deputy sheriff's wife. They were lying there in the afterglow of lovemaking, watching Family Feud on the television, both of them spent from love's ardor. Pastor Paul was smoking, and Jan was nuzzled up to him, her head on his chest, a satisfied smile on her face. Deputy Sheriff Dermody knew what was going on. He knew all about it, and he allowed it to continue. Why? Because he was in the midst of an affair of his own with the dispatcher at the courthouse, Susie Proyle. It was a little arrangement the deputy and his wife had worked out that kept them both reasonably happy. Besides, they had three kids. They couldn't divorce. They wouldn't. There was too much to lose. So they kept it quiet and went about their affairs discreetly, or as best they could, hoping that no one in town would catch on. But of course, this is very difficult to do in a place like Ackerley. Small towns are gossip mills, and already there was whispering. Did you see them? It was not a good situation. Good for gossip, maybe, but little else. Mossy was feeling no pain by 3 o'clock that afternoon. He'd had several beers and had worked his way through at least half a pack of Terrytons. Now he was playing darts with Goot Huebner, but Mossy couldn't seem to make a single dart hit the bullseye. As a matter of fact, he'd thrown several darts, and he hadn't even stuck one to the target yet. The last one he threw nearly hit Big Ken Davis, who said,
"Hey, watch it, Mossy."
"I'm sorry, Ken. I seem to be a little rusty today."
"Seemed to be drunk as usual," Ken said, and all the men laughed. Mossy laughed too, but he was embarrassed. He hated to be teased like that, hated the thought that maybe people thought he was just an old, sad drunk. Maybe it was time to go home.
"Well, my dart game is lacking, Goot. I believe I'll head on home." "Okay, Mossy, I should probably get going, too. I've had just about enough beer for one day anyway.
Both of them threw their coats on and said their goodbyes to everyone. Pete nodded from behind the bar.
Gotta pay that tab soon,
Pete said to Mossy, and the men all laughed again.
Yeah, yeah, Mossy said. Tomorrow, Pete.
We're closed tomorrow, Mossy.
Okay, well, Monday then, Pete. I'll pay you Monday.
All right, Mossy. We'll see you then. You boys have good night now.
Mossy and Goot stepped outside. Late afternoon now, but sun still bright made him squint. It was colder out. Henrietta was practicing later than usual. She wasn't home when Mossy slid the back door open and came inside. He went to the bathroom and then he laid down on their bed in his coat and his clothes. He passed right out. Henrietta was still at the church, still practicing the hymns on the organ. She'd run through so many of them, dozens of them, and she played them all with great heart and care. Faith of our fathers, O God, our help in ages past, and other ones lesser known, such as Thou, O Lord, art God alone, an immortal, invisible God, only wise. She loved that one. Usually she'd practice at a low volume, not wanting to be heard outside on the sidewalk. But on this particular afternoon, Henrietta played louder and louder till the stained glass shook. And somebody called the police and they had to come and tell Henrietta to tone it down a little, which she did. She didn't want any trouble with the law. Now she hoped that the local paper wouldn't print a little story about the incident, how embarrassing that would be. Henrietta gathered her songbooks and hymnals, her purse and her little lavender sweater, and she went home to Mossy, who was passed out in their bed. Pastor Paul did receive a call from the police department just to let him know that there'd been a complaint about loud organ music coming from the church. Of course, on Sunday, this would have been just fine, but as it was on a Saturday, well, folks just weren't used to it.
I'm sorry for the trouble. I'm sorry for the trouble.
Pastor Paul said,
I'll have a word with her. It won't happen again. She's a very committed and passionate organist.
Pastor Paul put down the phone, but he frowned. They were her mother's pills, her cancer pills, but her mother was dead. Seconals, they called them. Jackie Dermody had kept them for just such an occasion. She was deeply ashamed of her involvement with Pastor Paul, their torrid affair. As much as she desired him, maybe even loved him, she knew that she was looked upon unfavorably by some in the community, those that were in on the little secret. It's not that the secret was really out, but yet it was. People knew, and if they didn't talk about it out in the open, they whispered behind closed doors. Jackie could see it in their eyes, the way they looked at her, at the super value at the Rexall. Even worse, the way they looked at her in church, turning around in the pews. And then there was her husband carrying on the way he was with Susie Proyle. Susie Proyle. Sure, Jackie and her husband had an arrangement, but it didn't stop the bitterness, the resentment, even the jealousy that festered just beneath the surface. And now Jackie couldn't stand it anymore. She put 10 or 12 of the seconals in her mouth and she upended the whole rest of the bottle. She forced the pills down with big gulps of a big gulp. And then she laid down on her bed and she waited to die. Mossy was on his bed, too, but he wasn't quite ready to die. He was just dead drunk as a skunk and passed out when Henrietta came home, still embarrassed from being told to keep the volume down on that church organ. And now she was worried that Pastor Paul would hear about it and that he'd be disappointed. She so wanted to please him. And oh, there was Mossy, passed out in his clothes on their bed. Best not to wake him, lest he be in the mood. So she let him sleep, just let him sleep. And Mossy slept, and as he did, he dreamed. He dreamed of 6 stout beers lined up on a bar, 6 beers with beautiful frothy heads in frosted mugs that sweated and gleamed in the bar light.
On the house, Mossy,
Pete said from behind the bar, and in his dream Mossy drank them down one after another as the boys cheered him on. And when he had drunk the last one and he'd slammed the mug to the bar in triumph, he promptly wet the bed and snored straight through the accident, completely unaware of his sodden pants, the wet sheets that Henrietta would have to change, as she had so many, many times before. Jackie Dermody laid there in the dark, waiting to feel the effects of the deadly dose of seconals that she had swallowed. Suddenly she wished that she hadn't taken them at all. What had she been thinking? She didn't want to die. She tried to get up, but she found she was having difficulty moving. She seemed to have no coordination. Everything in her field of vision was blurred and spinning. She got to her feet for just a moment, then she fell and hit her head on the nightstand. She tried to rise again, but now she could barely move at all. She tried to call out to her husband, to Pastor Paul, to anyone, but her mouth, her tongue could make words. She grunted and huffed and struggled, writhing grotesquely on the floor. Though the phone, she tried to reach for it on the nightstand, but she couldn't seem to reach it. She passed out. 5 minutes later, she vomited in her mouth. The vomit clogged her throat and vital airway, and she choked to death on her bedroom floor.
What's this I hear about the police coming to the church?
It was Pastor Paul on the phone, calling Henrietta.
I'm sorry, Pastor Paul.
Henrietta, we've discussed this before. Now, everyone knows you're a wonderful organist, and the church is very fortunate to have you. But just the same, I feel your actions cannot go unpunished.
Oh, please, Pastor Paul,
Henrietta pleaded.
Please don't punish me.
Henrietta, I'm suspending you for 2 weeks. I'm sorry. We'll have Esther Grable play for the next couple.
Esther Grable? Oh, Pastor Paul, no,
She is adequate, and she will have to do while you are under suspension, Henrietta. I'm sorry. Now, Henrietta was livid. Getting suspended was one thing, but being replaced by Esther Grable was more than she could bear. Paula thought Esther's playing to be ham-fisted, without feeling, and furthermore, she felt Esther's song selection was, well, inappropriate, horrible even. Why, when Paula and Mossy had taken that weekend trip to Tarkio, word had it that Esther had filled in and she'd played selections from the rock musical Godspell. Some of the older parishioners had been quite appalled. Henrietta had spoken to Esther afterwards, not scolding her, but suggesting that if there ever were a next time, perhaps Esther ought to consider some of the more time-honored hymns for inclusion in Sunday services. Esther countered that the young people in the Dayglow pew had really enjoyed the music, applauded even.
Applauded in the church? Why?
Maybe people applauded in the Lutheran church, but not in the Methodist church. It just wasn't done.
Do you understand me, Henrietta?
Pastor Paul continued.
A 2-week suspension.
There was a long silence, and then Henrietta said,
Yes, Pastor Paul.
Later that evening, not 2 hours after their conversation,
Henrietta had driven to Quick Mart for a box of game to wash her peed-on sheets. That drunken Mossy, she was so angry. But then she saw the marquee in front of the church, and she lost it completely. There, in newly mounted letters put up by Pastor Paul himself, were these words: Sunday Sermon, Reaching Today's Troubled Youth. Esther Grable plays selections from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Jesus Christ,
Henrietta said. And she braked so hard that the wheels of her tortured Pinto smoked and squealed to a stop. She got out of the car for a moment, turned her face skyward, and screamed,
God damn you, Esther Grable!
Then she got back into her car and stepped on the gas. If the Pinto had had more power, she might have peeled out. But as it was, she accelerated mildly. However, by the time she encircled the park a couple of times and was heading down Main Street, pounding on the horn in a rage and running stop signs as she went, Henrietta had managed to bring the car to an impressive 55 miles per hour, which in the city limits was extremely fast. Suddenly, she pulled the wheel to the left. The Pinto ran up and over a curb, mowed down a parking meter, rocketed across the sidewalk, and slammed head-on into the coast-to-coast store. She was not wearing a seatbelt, and Henrietta was thrown through the windshield and through the plate glass front window of the coast-to-coast. 20 feet later, she came to rest in front of the Ortho Garden Products display, right by the BB's, where they sold the BB's. 20 minutes later, Dr. Wiedemeyer from the county hospital put a stethoscope to Henrietta's chest and muttered,
"Well, she's gone. There she's gone. Nothing we can do."
Mossy was passed out naked in his living room recliner when they came to tell him about Henrietta. They had a hard time waking him up. Even then, he was too inebriated to really understand what had happened. He'd peed the chair. Some of the firemen put a blanket on him, and they pinned a note to it explaining what had happened.
"Oh, dear God,"
Pastor Paul said when he heard the news. Not only was his organist dead from a rage brought about by the perhaps unfair suspension he had imposed upon her, but his lover was dead too, Jackie Dermody, from pills. Pills she had taken to blot out the shame of their affair.
"Oh, God,"
Pastor Paul cried.
"This is too much. Too much."
Shortly after 1 a.m., and after a good deal of prayer, Pastor Paul threw a rope over one of the tall beams in the sanctuary, tied the other end around his neck. Stepping off a chair, he twitched for a time and then slowly went still and was gone. Mossy was mortified to find that the next morning, not only was he naked in the wet living room chair, but the note pinned to his blanket read, "Mossy, Henrietta died in an automobile accident last night. Please call the sheriff when you wake up." Mossy staggered to the phone, but when he called Sheriff Dermody's office, there was no reply. "She wrecked the Pinto because she was so upset about my drinking. It's all my fault." Mossy went into the bedroom and opened the top drawer of his bureau. He withdrew a .38 caliber pistol, the one he had purchased when the lawnmower was stolen. Without taking time to reconsider, he held the pistol to his right temple, and the doorbell rang.
"Mossy, open up. It's me, Goot. I heard about
Henrietta."
"Let me in, Mossy."
Mossy lowered the gun from his temple and decided to let Goot in. His old friend had saved him. Unfortunately, Mossy tripped on a pile of tinkled-on sheets that were left on the floor, and he fell down. Mossy hit the carpet hard, and his .38 discharged, and the bullet ripped through his heart, exited through his back, careened off a wall, pierced the front door and hit Gut Haner in the left shoulder. Gut was so surprised and unpleasantly alarmed that he went into cardiac arrest, and with no one there to help him, he fell to the ground, dead. It was a big funeral, as one might imagine. 5 gleaming caskets lined up side by side. Pastor Ingemar Lindholm of the Lutheran Church had kindly offered to guest officiate, and the elders had reluctantly agreed, knowing what might happen. A large crowd gathered on that rainy Tuesday afternoon for the services. Pete was there from Pete's Tap, and he had flyers printed up advertising the free beer that would be available after the services, all in remembrance of Mossy. It was a kind gesture that many would take advantage of. Sheriff Dermody and Susan Proyle sat together, to the utter disbelief of many, though they would eventually marry and stay that way. The mayor was there, representatives of the fire department, the barber, even Gary Berghoff from MASH was there, and no one was quite sure why. After the eulogy had been rendered, Esther Grable played a couple of songs for the mourners. Though it was a somber occasion, Esther was able to lift the spirits of all in attendance with a medley of up-tempo tunes from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. The young people in the Dayglow pew were especially moved, to the point that some of them rose and began to dance in the aisles. Then a handful of adults followed suit, and when the music stopped, a robust round of applause erupted, and Esther Grable beamed from the organ bench. Needless to say, she was asked to replace Henrietta permanently, and she's still the church organist today.
Yes.
When's the last time you went to church, Bob?
I was in a church three weeks ago in Rome. I was in church, you know.
Physically,
I was in a church.
Seeing one, yeah.
Yeah. But actually, several churches. I was in, like, 4 churches.
Beautiful.
Yeah, fantastic.
Did you feel anything?
I felt nothing.
Nothing at all.
No. I mean, there was great art in there. I saw, like, some Caravaggios on the wall, like 3 Caravaggios, like, inches from my face. That
but
was
no,
pretty amazing.
I've got to change my ways.
Nothing like that, no.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
at one point, I did think I needed to get wine.
You want to say anything to the listeners? The song's going to end, and then I'm done with you.
I could be done right now.
You ready?
You pointed to the seat and you said, sit down, and ordered me here. So,
if anyone wants to call, this is your window, 201-209.
I got drinks waiting for me at downtown. I need to, you know.
Just is waiting right
make
now.
Make a connection.
201-209-9368. Last chance to catch Fabio on the line and ask us a question, and we can ask you questions. It's hard to get that first caller, though, Fab.
It is. But they will come through for you. I know. I can feel
if
it.
If I start a song,
then they'll call. That's how it works.
And now they're just waiting for that.
Well, they want you to talk. You see, that's the thing. They don't want to interrupt you. See, that's what it is, what it's about.
I just keep watching it like it's going to light up. Oh, look. I'm genuinely leapt out of my chair. Is anybody there? Clay Pigeon and Fabio.
Yo, it's Marcel.
Marcel.
How you
hey,
doing?
Hey, man. How you doing? Are you in New Jersey or are you across the river?
I am in Brooklyn.
You are in Brooklyn.
What's going on, Marcel? Are you working right now?
No, I got home a little bit ago, like, biked home from Brooklyn Heights to Bushwick.
FMU is a huge part of your life. I see you on the Accu a lot.
It is, to say the least. I'm a little obsessed.
Are you? Who are your favorites?
Say that again?
Who are your favorites?
You don't, have to answer that.
I got two of them right here.
See, I knew he was going to say that. That's very kind of you.
Marcel, yes, what are you doing for the Christmas, Hanukkah, Festivus
Christmas,
holiday?
I'm from Jersey originally, but my parents moved all the way up to Saranac Lake.
Wow.
So I go up there for Christmas.
Wow, that's way up
you
there.
You love Jersey, Marcel?
Yeah.
You love
I do. I do. When I lived there, I wanted to leave it and move to New York as soon as possible, but I've grown to appreciate it.
If Bruce handed you his boots and said, man, can you just polish these for me? I got to go on in 20 minutes and gave you a can of kiwi and a rag. Would you do it?
Wait, polish what?
Bruce's
boots.
No.
You wouldn't? I would, Fob. I'd say, sure, Bruce.
I wouldn't.
I don't think I would polish someone I even liked boots.
Yeah, see, there you go.
Me to do it.
You can't stoop that low.
Not I even
mean,
a celebrity?
That? I mean,
that's so
context,
demeaning.
Maybe.
I mean, it's really demeaning. Like, why would you do such
if
a thing?
If Donald Trump gave you a buck and a quarter and said, go get me a Dr. Pepper, you wouldn't do it?
I wouldn't give him the time of day, let alone get him a Dr.
It's
Pepper.
It's so hard to imagine that happening. It all depends on the context, you know? Maybe if Trump was like, hey, man, I'm really in a jam. I'm walking in here. I really need a Dr. Pepper. Can you get me one? You know, maybe. But if he flung some money at me like that, I mean, come on.
I remember,
I hope you wouldn't either, Clay.
I remember John Worster did the funniest bit on Sharpling about Obama being really into Fugazi, like he was a closet Fugazi. That was brilliant. Oh, man. So, Marcel, what's your sign?
My sign?
Yeah.
Your girlfriend would know, right?
You're an Aries. That's a strong sign. You don't think much about it, though. I'd be happy to be an Aries. You guys get things done. People like you.
Yeah, I don't take much stock in it. We had a friend who did, and he used to bring it up a lot, but we called him Starboy.
Yeah.
You made fun of him
about his astrology. Do you believe in anything magical, mystical, or other? Is it all just cut and dry?
I believe that everyday life can be kind of magical, but in any sort of beyond this realm, I'm not into that really.
Isn't it vain, Fob, to imagine that it's all? Well, I guess you're not really saying the Earth is the only place life exists, though. That's kind of
unfair. No, I'm not saying that.
That's different, though, than mysticism.
I feel like saying I don't believe in anything isn't really true. I believe it's all here.
Do you think if you were really in trouble on your deathbed, might you throw one out there, a prayer?
I wonder. I would like to think not, but I'd like to think also, you know, I'd like to think I'd be like my man David Hume, and I'd reject everything till the end. You know, everybody was there trying to get him to say something, but he didn't.
I like what, was it, Henry the Eighth? One of the French kings, right?
Yeah.
On his deathbed. He said, après moi la déluge.
Bring me a turkey leg.
No. No, he's saying, after me, the flood, open the floodgates, let it go, everything. I don't care what happens, basically.
That's good. Yes, I hope I'm there.
What's your opinion on lead guitar solos, Marcel? You jumping on the hate bandwagon?
Oh, no.
You like them?
Marcel plays guitar himself, don't you, Marcel?
I've been known to throw down some leads.
See that? See that? You're getting into a very personal area.
Wrong
for
guy
him.
To bring that up with.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah. Marcel.
Well, you know, you can overdo it. I will say you can overdo it. Solo.
Too many notes, right?
What's the last?
Yeah. You got to hang on the notes.
What's the last book you read?
What's the what?
Last book you read.
The best book I've read.
The last.
Oh, right now I'm reading Lovecraft stories.
What did you read? The Color from Space. That's my favorite one.
No, I didn't read that yet,
that
but I will.
That's
right
the best
now,
thing ever.
Right now I'm halfway through the Mountains of Madness.
I'm glad to hear you. Oh, do you ever read Ambrose Bierce?
No, I haven't.
He's another one, yeah.
He's a good horror dude?
Yeah. Real early.
Very early. Late 1800s or something.
I'm reading him, I'm reading Poe, I'm getting into the sort of October
spirit. You like Stephen King?
Not so into Stephen King.
Too mainstream for you?
Not really, just not that great.
Bob's saying he's got to go. We got to go, Marcel. First say.
All right. Good to talk to you guys. I'll see you soon.
Marcel, what's your message of peace and love to the FMU listener, the average listener?
Oh, man. You'd think I'd have this answer prepared since I knew you were going to ask me. I'll just say keep listening.
You love America?
I remember you asked someone that once, and their answer was, I don't think a country is something you should have feelings of love for, and so I'm going to steal his answer.
How much do you weigh?
I weigh like 140.
What's your inseam?
My inseam? That, is that my waist?
No, the what is that? From your crotch to the floor?
Yeah.
32?
32. Okay. You're a good man, Marcel.
Based on that?
Yeah. Yep.
He can tell everything from that.
That yeah. alone.
All right, guys.
Take it easy, man.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Love you, man.
All right. I got to go.
This is Larry Coryell. The Space album on a Vanguard.
Yes.
It's good, isn't it?
His early stuff, interesting. Not my thing, but whatever.
Will I ever find something you like?
Yeah, you will someday.
All right, Fab. What do you want to say? What's your message of peace and love to those FMU listeners, the average listener?
Stand up and be counted. When the time has come, when it's time to vote, go in there and vote. Okay, because that's important. You know, like if only like 30% of 40% of the population votes, then you know, whoever gets in there is you're partly to blame.
You're so engaged, man. You're plugged in.
Not
you're
plugged
election
in, but
ready.
But no, but it's it affects you. It affects all of us, right? So
if Lincoln Chafee wanted to give you a hug, would you give him one?
I don't know. I don't know the guy. I don't go hugging strangers.
No. But he's a celebrity. He's famous.
I don't care that he's famous. Who the hell cares?
That kind of filters you out.
I don't care. Look, fame is fleeting nonsense. I don't care about that.
Would you get Debbie Reynolds a Coke?
No. God, I don't go and get Cokes for anybody unless they're my personal friends or family. And even then, there's got to be a good reason for it.
World Capitals, as I slowly fade you down.
All right. See you later, man.
World Capitals, as I slowly fade you down.
Okay, very nice.
Did I snap at you?
No.
Okay.
Bye.
No, you're not going to do it? You say World Capitals.
Oh, you want me to say World Capitals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Belgium.
I'm supposed to... Oh, Belgium. Brussels. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Zaire.
I don't know.
Kinshasa.
Okay.
Yeah. Iowa.
I don't know.
Des Moines, man.
I don't know a lot of capitals.
Vermont.
I'm really bad about that.
Montpelier. The United States.
The United States. What is that? All right. I got to go.
Thank you to some people who've pledged during the silent marathon. Let me just name a few names. I'll make this quick. I'll scroll up to the top. Aaron in Denton, Texas. Boss Van Dam in Utrecht, Netherlands. See you, Fob. Robert Wilkinson in Manchester, United Kingdom. Cliff in Syracuse. I was saying last names. Louis Mazzari. Oh, jeez, I did it again. Sorry. Louis in Elliott, Maine. Jesse in Brooklyn. Jeff in Bolton, United Kingdom. Ivan in Moscow. Man, that's so cool. Moscow. Ivan Nastrovia. Daniel in Seattle, Washington, home of grunge, Lane Staley. I love it. The first, wasn't the first Starbucks there? Boss doubled down. Andre Fisher. I was thinking he was the guitarist of Sparks, but not so. Rome, Italy. Rome checking in, Fob. You hear that? Rome. You bet. Dear Clay, I'm a fan of your show, especially those 5 to 10 minute transitions of you and Fabio. On your own, not so much. You and Fabio, solid gold. Klaus. I love that name. Klaus with 2 A's. Dusseldorf, Germany. I'm nailing Germany, Fob. They love me over there. Ich habe Kopfschmerzen und ich gehe in das Krankenhaus. Ich bin ein Berliner, Fabio. Sehr gut. Dummkopf, Schweinhund. Joel Butler in Canada, Darling's Island. Alex in Cedar Creek, Texas. I think it's DJ Elrock. Man, did you go crazy? I love it. Thank you. Tom in Minneapolis. I love Minneapolis. I like that I'm liked there because that's a hip place, baby. Prince, the Time, the First Avenue Club, the roof fell down. Hope everyone was okay. That was kind of serious. And Dave in Seattle. Home of Jimi Hendrix, a paratrooper, Jimi Hendrix, James Marshall. Thanks, everybody. Keep pledging. We love you. This is the 3 o'clock. Her head's revolving. It's Clay's Classic. 16 in front of Hardy. Stay with me, people. This is Mike Batt, Love Makes You Crazy, from the album 00 on The Dusty Show. I'm glad you're there.
I was reading in a history book, before the seventh floor, they used to have a thing that they called love, that we don't have anymore. I don't know the feeling, but I'm told it was an evil thing. It used to make you crazy and fall down. No one knows what it could bring.
I'm cramming them in. I've got just 11 minutes remaining. Trying to get the most music magic in the next few minutes that I can for you. Trying to make it. This is Lake, another Clay's classic. This is Time Bomb, TNP.
Like I'm sitting on a time bomb, baby.
Kind of super tramp, isn't it? Played a lot of songs you've heard previously on the Dusty Show. I'm branding today, burning these songs into your mind for future reference. You'll hear them again and again. Some of the best songs ever written, like this one from Fort Worth, Texas, Blood Rock, the USA album. It's a Sad World on the Dusty Show.
Love this song.
Party just minutes away. Stay with us, everybody.
Why must there be so much confusion when there is so little time? Life is full of disillusion, cutting you down in your prime. It's a sad world in a troubled time. It's a bad day coming down.
Troubled time, but it's a good one. I love it. Talk about that Lake song on the Accu playlist. People agreed it sounded like Supertramp. Somebody else said early, yes. Bebo said, but not as good as either of those. on The Dusty Show, for the most part, pretty good is good enough. Like this song. Snare. You don't hear that big organ much anymore.
My feet upon the moonlit dust. Oh, well for the sailor lad that he sings in his boat on the bay. Break, break, break at the foot of thy crags, O sea.
Beyonce, Beyonce, Beyonce.
Absolutely.
Beyonce, Beyonce, Beyonce.
Absolutely.
Oh, I've always loved this one. Gordon Lightfoot from the Sundown album. So pretty. Is there anyone home? WFMU.
Is there anyone home in this house made of stone? Anyone inside know my name? I've been around for a half a hundred days. Never saw a door shut so tight. Turn around, don't look down. There's a man behind you with a gun. Like an someone stir. There's a light around you, I've come to switch it on. It will brighten every room. Don't be ashamed if you feel all our warmer in your heart.
You got that feeling in your soul.
Melancholy sound. I used to listen to this in my Gremlin when I was high in high school, out on the country roads, wondering where life would lead.
Is there anyone home in this house made of stone?
Right here, the captain's chair.
Anyone in there who might care? I've grown weary and wise, and I feel much amazed. Got a few good tales to unwind. Turn around, don't look down. There's a man behind you with a gun.
Here's the report of the record. Gold disc, that is, Grand Prix, has been won. So, in that sense, and also, please come back next year. That is, also, please come back next year. That is, also, please come back next year. Weather report, please come back.
Cool old weather report live from Tokyo, 1971. Vertical Invaders. Weather report, Dusty. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Thanks, Aki Playlisters, for being there. I always love your comments. You know I do. You know I need them. I grovel for them. Dennis Dunaway on with Diane Kamikaze. This past afternoon, Dennis Dunaway, Alice Cooper Band. Check that out on the archives. I'm going to do that. And the whole TNP follows tonight. Artie Wides, Sinner's Crossroads, Kevin Nutt, Dave the Spaz, nickname Stan. Listen to Shorter. I'll see you guys next time. Make a pledge. Love ya. Take care. Always remember.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wide. I'm Hardy Wide. Join me now, won't you, for a real old-fashioned whiskey sour Manhattan type of get-together. The kind where we sit around a campfire until we realize what a bad idea it is to have an open flame right where we're about to pass out. But don't worry, my friends. I'm here to catch you and lift you up before you fall face down into the fire. Welcome. I am Hardy White. And in one hand I hold the Bible. And in the other hand I hold Don Quixote. And then I set down the Bible and I pick up Moby Dick. And then I set down Don Quixote and I pick up the Bible. And then I set both of them down again. And I ask you, under which one is the foam ball? But I have something to confess. The foam ball is still in my hand. Not because I'm trying to trick you, but because I forgot to put under one of them. And I tell you, that's how we inadvertently create magic, is by inviting into our lives those wonderful twins, forgetting and misremembering. Now, I have never been on the radio before, and I'm not exactly sure what I'm supposed to do. I know that being on the radio is a lot like sneaking into someone's mind. Now, how do we sneak into someone's mind? First of all, we take the oldest of us in the gang, and he pays to get in, and then once he's in, he opens the back door and lets the rest of us in so we can all watch Mother Jugs and Speed. But the joke's on you, because not all movies are worth watching. What is the cinema in your head, my friend? And you say, Hardy, I don't know, but it has much more advertisements than it used to have. It used to be just a short subject and the feature, but now all sorts of things they want to sell me, and I'm not sure what's the entertainment, what's my thoughts, and what are the advertisements. And I say, step out with me into the lobby. Now, what is the lobby? The lobby is an area full of potential and promises. We see those wonderful movie posters. It looks like it's going to be a great movie. We've yet to be disappointed. We just see the wonderful promise of the thing to come. Popcorn and candy. We have not yet suffered from the explosive diarrhea that we will have when we consume it all. I have never watched an entire motion picture without feeling slightly nauseous. Which is wonderful. It's wonderful to be surrounded by the entertainment. When I go to the theater, I allow myself to smell the audience, draw in all the other things. It isn't just about that thing on the screen. It's about the room you're in. We forget that we're sitting in a room and watching it. Now, radio, how did it begin? For years, people sat in rooms alone, empty rooms, calling out to the universe before there was ever any way to do that. And then finally we were able to stick a microphone in there and hear what that person was saying on the radio. And oh, I'll tell you what, nothing has really changed, has it? I don't know what to say to people. It's like when I go to a party. I know that the best way to interact is by asking people about themselves. How are you? Good. So you tell me something about yourself right now. Okay, great. Oh, that's fantastic. I have a question. This beautiful needlepoint of this Japanese woman, did you do that? That gold thread looks like real gold. Oh my goodness, it isn't though. Another question. Where is your powder room? And it has to be a powder room because I specifically have to powder myself. I've got my underwear is really digging into my leg here. And if you don't have any powder, I can make it myself from cornstarch and talcum and some other ingredients like that. And I'll just go in there, shut the door. But now there's powder everywhere. And then I go and I reach for the toilet paper, and the toilet paper roll just keeps going. And I need toilet paper because I dropped a painting, fell off the wall and into the toilet. Now, most of this came from Peter Sellers. You know, I got it from him. Or did he get it from me? And I don't know why paintings fall into toilets. Maybe they're supposed to be there. Maybe originally the toilet was a place to keep art, and we just started pooping in it. We can never know the evolution of things because so much has disappeared. So much has been forgotten or misremembered. I remember that my grandfather had a head like a pumpkin, and sometimes he would shoot candy out of his belly like that. I'm probably wrong. It's good, though, to make mistakes. It's good to fill things in with things that are imagined, because we can't ever completely know things. I was talking to a philosopher the other day, and he said, you know, there's a problem with induction. And I said, you know what? I've taken this damn thing to the mechanic a million times, and he keeps telling me that it's my problem, that's from putting maple syrup into the gas tank. And he said, no. Induction is like the opposite of deduction. Induction is when we make general conclusions from specifics. For instance, every crow is black that I've seen. Therefore, crows are black. Now, my problem with this is time. If I were the Chambers Brothers, this is where I would hit the cowbell. Time. You see, there may come a time when there is a crow that is not black, and it will make that theory false. So induction just gives you an idea of probability, doesn't it? Or just talks about something temporary. We must fill it in the creative spaces, fill it in with something else. Get out your crayons. It's time to draw a mustache on that picture of a pretty woman. Oh, I'm so glad to be with you today. And like I say, I don't have much to offer you. I have come to this party empty-handed, but I've brought a tray of hard-boiled eggs because they're always appropriate. I don't know if we're celebrating something or someone has died, but either way, I think eggs are appropriate. And either way, we're all going to be lifted up by being together. Oh, my goodness. And if you need to get out of the party, you can go out through the bathroom because I noticed there was a tiny little window there. And you can sneak out. And I know that that works because there was a skeleton lodged in it. So somebody had tried it and unfortunately probably couldn't get through at the time because they were too heavy. Ironically, now that they're a skeleton, they can fit with ease. Oh, that's the way that the world works, doesn't it? Say, Hardy, who are you to be talking to me on the radio? Well, I don't know who you are, so I don't know who I am to be talking to you on the radio. But I do know that I have this opportunity, and I must now follow my philosophy. And what is that? My philosophy is to be open to other people, to not necessarily plan something. If I were to plan something, I might plan incorrectly. You see, evolution and all things that account for things that they can't, variables that they can't foresee, must use some randomness, must throw the dice just in case. If you called me and say, Hardy, I need you to come over to my house, there's an emergency, I need, it's breaking up and I don't know what you need. I might put together a big bag of things. Oh, I'm going to take some duct tape. And I'm going to take some grapefruit. And I'm going to take a wrench. And I'm going to take a flashlight. And I'm going to take a medical expert.